Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
What's good, internet? It is Monday, January 14th, 2019, and you are listening to Waypoint Radio, episode 214?
It is.
Is it 214?
It's the Valentine's Day episode.
214, you're right. Yes. It totally is. We are coming to you.
Last time was my birthday.
Wait, wow,
what?
Not today, Kato. Your birthday is
on Valentine's Day?
Your birthday is a day after mine.
Wow, true love.
Wow, we got a lot of B-days.
O-M-G.
A lot of B-days coming up.
Ooh. A lot of Aquarians on Waypoint.
That makes sense. That makes sense.
I don't know
too much
about that.
We are coming to you from Control Room B here in Vice HQ, Brooklyn, New York. You already know what it is. We are like a hop, skip, and a jump away from the bunker. We are below Lobby 1. Lobby 1 has a mini fridge in it now, and there's television executives in there. This room.
And now we're in a room that's like, there's lots of screens.
It's a control room.
It's a control room.
For yeah. TV control.
And moon operations.
Yes. Yeah.
I'm pretty sure.
I feel like I'm embarking on or helping someone else embark on a trip to space.
Yeah,
check it out, Patrick.
This is what it looks like in here.
That is okay. You weren't joking. Like, control room is accurate. Okay.
Yeah.
True control room.
It's like actually a control room.
Damn it. Okay. Sure.
Yep.
Yep. And we're just tucked into a little corner here.
I thought maybe control room was just like, oh, you've got to give cute names to the different rooms in an
office.
Like, no, that looks like you're going to run the Oscars in that room.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yep. And instead, what we're going to do is talk about video games here on Waypoint Radio. We've been playing them. None of the stuff I've been playing I can talk about because it's Mark of the Ninja, which we're going to do the Waypoint 101 on Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's stuff that has like embargoes. So I can't really bring anything to the table today except my glorious host voice has returned.
Yay.
I can help operate things. I can help guide conversations.
Control things from the control room.
From the control room. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. But I'm going to lean on y'all because I know there have been some new releases and I know there's stuff coming up that you can talk a little bit about. Let's start with you, Patrick. You've been playing a game that I don't think anyone here has played. Did you play it, Danielle, back in the day?
Only bits and pieces. So
all right. So
it was a while ago.
Super Mario Brothers.
New Super Mario Brothers.
You.
New.
New Super Mario Brothers U Deluxe?
Yes.
Correct.
Plus,
yes.
Luigi Bros.
Plus the Luigi Bros.
Yeah. Right? The Luigi.
Yeah, it does have the Luigi mode. So yeah, this is a repackaging of the Wii U launch game, which itself was, I mean, it was a sequel to the Wii game, New Super Mario Brothers Wii, which is a long maligned art style. It's just a sort of a maligned offshoot of the Mario series in general. Like the aesthetic is just really boring and bland.
It's like a 2D levels, but with 3D art, and the art is like very.
There's no DreamWorks to the Pixar of the main.
Yeah,
kind of thing, you know?
There's just nothing distinctive about it for a series that has long prioritized being. Have like iconic looks, no matter like how it's being presented, right? Like from far extremes of Yoshi's Island to even just the way like 3D world, 3D land. Like they have a look, and this game has a look. It's just a bad look, and they've continued to double down on it. I mean, partially because New Super Mario Brothers Wii sold a lot. Partially because it was a Mario game on the Wii, right? They probably could have put out anything and it would have sold reasonably well. But also, just if you're a fan of good Mario games. The New Super Mario Brothers Wii was a totally fine way to spend a weekend with some friends playing like a strange multiplayer variant of Mario Brothers, but it was not a particularly strong entry in terms of level design, in terms of just creative decisions on like the mechanics, like in the sort of like little spins that they do on from version to version and sort of spin off. And the Wii U one was sort of like immediately. Starting with the confusion on what the Wii U was, it just was not a didn't come across as a particularly strong entry. I played a little bit of it when it came out. I was more taken by Zombie U at the time. Mm-hmm. And that was like where a lot of my time was spent when the Wii was launched. And so I more or less wrote it off because I am in that contingent that didn't find much to enjoy outside of the multiplayer stuff. But then, like, I thought I was settled. And we've talked about this on the podcast before. But then, like, Jeremy Parrish, you know, Waypoint contributor, Retronauts, like, just really threw me for a fucking loop when he did a Polygon ranking of all the Mario Brothers games and listed New Super Mario Brothers U as the best Mario game. And
better than 3, better than Super Mario Brothers, better than 64,
Mario
better than Galaxy.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Better than Galaxy 2, better than Sunshine.
Oh, yeah.
What was the level design?
He was saying that the art direction and some of the mechanical stuff were blinding people to a game that has really brilliant, understated level design. Jeremy Parrish is not a troll. He's a really good game critic. And so, like, it stuck in my craw in a way that other, like, I would have looked at other lists and been like, you're just trying to advocate for a game that you actually think is, like, number 7, but you're putting it at number 1 because you want people to talk about your list. And I was like, well, Jeremy doesn't seem like the kind of person who would do that. So I've been trying to go in to this new one with open eyes and open mind. I started playing it a little bit on Friday afternoon. I made it through the first world with regular Mario. It's just going through that Wii U version and just bored to tears. Just like, I got 3 levels in, put it down. I was like, I should play another level. I'd play a level, I'd put it down. Like, I was folding laundry instead of going through another level. And I was getting the same vibes that I'd had before. And so I never played the Luigi version. I guess in my head, I thought it's just Mario, but with Luigi. Like, I don't know. I didn't know much about it, but I did a little bit of research, and actually, like, it's essentially like Nintendo making fuck you levels, making Kaizo levels. And,
oh, wow.
They reduced the timer. The timer is not a thing that most people even notice exists in 2D Mario games anymore, because sort of like lives, it's just something they've kept around, but is not actually, like, something you need to worry about. Like, it is incredibly rare that you're going to play a Mario level, a modern Mario game, and play a level so poorly that you're going to have to worry about how much time is left. And so it's just kind of there because these games have always had lives. It's satisfying to get a 1-up, and there's a timer to give some vague sense that you should keep moving. But in the Luigi version, it chops the timer down to 1.5 minutes. Well, 100 seconds, so a little over. So you're just under 2 minutes. To the point where, like, modern Mario games, this just happened to me a second ago. So I'm like 7 or 8 levels into the Luigi version. I'll sometimes just like set the my Switch down or my Wii U gamepad down. Like, I'm gonna answer an email or like write a tweet. Like, I got plenty of time. I don't even need to pause this fucking thing, and I'll just come back. And this came back, and 6 seconds left, and I, you know, the level is over. And even just the first couple of stages are very Kaizo-like. They are.
What is?
It's not showing.
Can you define what that means?
So Kaizo. I don't know the actual etymology of the term. So like, I'd have to go read a Wikipedia page. But like,
I think
it was
from a mod.
It's shorthand for like really, really difficult levels that are not necessarily about like a very well-considered flow in which the level design is both a consideration of the aesthetic of the level and also what it's asking of the player mechanically. Kaizo levels are meant to kill you, to punish you, where they're trying to be as tricky as possible. It's often when you're looking at YouTube videos, they're like, the hardest Mario level ever. It was a lot. I didn't play a lot of Kaizo stages when I did my Mario Maker streams, because Kaizo stages often require a certain like stringing together of like exploits and other weird things that I didn't have a knack for. I played a lot of hard levels, but Kaizo is sort of like a different tier. And Kaizo also has a certain aesthetic in which it's, you know, you're putting, you know, piranha plants, like, copy and pasted everywhere in a way that doesn't look very good, but is just supposed to make the level difficult. And so these levels are clearly pulling from, it seems like Nintendo responding to a response to their own series, like, over time.
Right.
Go ahead.
The original Kaizo levels were like hacks, right? Like, I think Kaizo just means
like they were ROM hacks. I just don't know the actual. Is Kaizo,
I think it means
was he
like
a creator? Is it an actual term?
No. Like, the word Kaizo means hacked or like remade, rebuilt.
Okay.
And so it's like a quick term to mean like, oh yeah, I hacked this ROM, and it was like someone literally making a ROM hack of hard ass levels for their friend, so that their friend could, like, play these fucking levels. Play them. I dare you to play these levels. And they're just like very trolly and very like hyper difficult, require incredibly precise play. And that stuff has only gotten more precise and more outrageous over time. I mean, AGDQ was just this week, and There's always either specific Kaizo Mario levels or something descended from it. You know, eventually you end up getting games like I Want to Be the Guy and all the fan game scene around that game.
Super Meat Boy is descendant of Kaizo. And Super Mario Maker was the first time that it was legitimized for a much larger audience, because it used to be you were playing ROM hacks, you were playing other sorts of things where you were using, you know, emulators. It seems easy to us, but that's like a weird hoop for your average person to jump through, to download like a level pack and stuff like that. So Mario Maker was sort of like this introduction of Kaizo to a much larger stage, as it became just like far more prominent in the average person coming across stages, or the average person's access to those sorts of stages. So
there's even sort of a history, if you'd even go back to the original Japanese Super Mario Brothers 2, which is filled with not troll stages, but like really difficult stuff.
Yeah.
Poison mushrooms that look like regular. Like there's ways in which that game is a little trolly. And so I think
they came over
cool.
here as the Lost Levels, right?
Right.
If I have my history correct. Yeah, totally. Which they are. Those are levels in which it's a similar trajectory to this, which is like, look, okay, you loved that game. Like, we're going to just like put the knife to you. And so as someone that found, part of, I think, Parrish's argument is that the new Super Mario Brothers U, it just takes a long. It's the equivalent of like you got to get 40 hours into Final Fantasy. What was that one? Final Fantasy 11? 10? No, not 11.
The MMO, not 10.
It was 11, right? No,
no,
that was
the MMO.
11
was the first MMO.
13.
I think it was 13. What was Final Fantasy 12? Wait, we need to.
That
think.
Was the MMO.
No, the 11 is.
Sorry,
the MMO.
No, that was the MMO style.
Oh,
it was 12. Not actually an MMO.
Who's in it?
Fran.
There was a big desert.
The bunny girl.
Oh, that's the one I want. Is that the one I want to play? That I never got around to. That's the one I want to play. That I never got around to.
Okay.
Around. I played an hour and a half of it.
Zodiac Age is the remake.
Yes. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So 13, the PS3 one.
Lightning is 13. Their Australian accent.
Yeah. Yes.
Like there was a lot of famous lines and a lot from, you know, that. Oh, 40 hours in, the game finally gets going. And so it seems like there's a little bit of an argument with New Super Mario Brothers U that it starts really, really slow, but the level design like gets better and better as it goes along. I don't have the patience or the time for that. I mostly just wanted to jump in here and sort of wrap my head around it again. And so I thought, well, I'll just jump in to the Kaizo stuff, because absent Mario Maker 2, like, this is the closest I can get to something else like that right now. And my brief impression of the first world is that it is absolute, like, I'm already I still don't like the look. I don't even really like how New Super Mario Bros. U feels as a game. I think it is an incredibly weak Mario playing game, I think. But the level design, I can't set it down. I have to be paying attention. I'm worried about the time. I'm not even messing around with collecting the coins. And I usually like to collect the extra stuff, because Nintendo usually does a good job of placing that in a way that's rewarding. I don't have time, interest. I look at the moves required to pull it off, and I'm like, fuck that! I'm not capable of doing that. And so that's an encouraging response to have to a game that I otherwise found extremely boring and rote and perfunctory. And so I'm super excited to have that as something I can sit down and play. So I'm definitely going to be playing more of it. I'm just glad that if I kept going down the regular Mario path, I think I would have just gotten bored and set it down like I did in the past. And so now it's nice that I'm just going to jump into the Luigi stuff, which is not for everyone, but it is
absolutely
for people like
you.
Me. And I'm curious to see where it goes from here.
One fun fact about the Luigi stuff is, I believe it was one of the first things that happened in the year of our Lord, the year of Luigi.
Oh, wow.
So,
yeah, that's...
Well, that was part of Nintendo's promotion for that whole year, was, I think, built around that update. Yeah.
Yeah.
God bless. Luigi bless.
Luigi bless,
Luigi
please.
Bless us.
Yeah. God. Well, that's Patrick. Thank you for letting us know about new Super Mario Brothers U
Deluxe.
Have you fucked around with Bowsette yet, or Peachette, Toadette?
Nah, I'm just all that stuff is in
regular
regular boring ass game.
I feel like you need to push through just to see, because
if someone is listening to this and they could tell me definitively, like, oh, this is where the change occurs.
Get to World 2 or
whatever. It would
take
me an hour and a half if I'm just going to rush through these levels. Like, I could do it where I'm just ignoring all the level design, just getting to the end. Like, if someone's like, oh, World 5 is like, and there is a skip. There's a skip where I could go.
Yeah, just do the skip.
I just did that article about someone using the skip. So, but it's, I'm
not
going to do this
on my
own. If someone wants to write in, if Jeremy Parrish, you're not listening, you got better things to do. But if anyone else knows, if Jeremy Parrish has talked about this, and if someone could give me a marker where then I could at least then say, oh, I made it to this. I got to this part. It still doesn't work for me. I'm willing to put in that time.
All right.
Even as football disappears from my life as the thing I sit on the couch and do on Sundays.
Same.
God bless. Chicago Bears lost the game for you, Austin Walker.
I know. That's how it goes.
Ah.
That's karma. That's how it goes sometimes.
No tears for me, Alshon. No tears from over here.
Poor Alshon Jeffries. All right. Natalie, Danielle.
Hey, did you call him Jeffries?
What did I say?
Did you call him Jeffries?
Yeah, I did. Listen.
Okay.
Jeffries Tubes.
Listen. It's been a long year. Okay.
His name. You and my wife both. I just gave up on correcting her. I was like,
really?
No, it's a common.
It's a single Y. It is, isn't it?
It's just Jeffrey. Yeah.
It is.
But everyone, it was.
Yeah. Why?
You could flip a coin. I have no idea. It's not like it rolls off the tongue like a natural sort of way.
Yeah.
Alshon Jeffrey.
It just says I've always said Jeffries. His last name is Jeffrey.
I don't know if that's like a Key and Peele where like they pluralize everything.
Right. I think that
became part of
skit.
The vernacular.
God.
Oh, Alshon Jeffries. Like, because that's how they do it. Anyway.
People from the Northeast just do that.
Yeah, just
it's
in
Nordstrom's.
General.
It's Nordstrom's. Right. It's whatever's Johnny's.
Absolutely.
Even if the name is Johnny, it's Johnny's.
Yeah, definitely. Anyway, talk to me about Piku Niku. Piku Niku?
Yeah.
You talk about the first couple of hours, like not a review. Yeah. This is us talking in a preview. For the PR reps out there, talking about this in a preview
first
capacity.
Yes.
Talk to me about Piku Niku. Okay, here's my question.
Yes.
Is... When I get emails about Piku Niku, one, I love saying the word.
Piku Niku.
Piku Niku. Two, all of the pitches on this are things like, here's your key for Devolver Digital's, quote, kid-friendly deep state conspiracy co-op puzzler, Piku Niku.
Yeah, the kid-friendly is what made me, like, not play it at first.
Okay.
I was like, okay, so it's like a kid's platformer or whatever. I don't really.
But the deep state conspiracy co-op puzzler didn't grab your attention?
After playing the first few, like literally 15, 20 minutes of it, I was like,
Can you expand on the
Yeah. So basically, the game.
What is this game?
This game is kind of a Katamari like aesthetic / sound design. And is like a puzzle platformer of sorts. You play as this little red friend who's got these long leggies, and they use the little leggies to kick stuff and do stuff around, and it's really, really cute. But you start off with this cinematic where a very mayor-like... of Watam, or not Watam.
Yeah, Watam had a mayor.
Yeah. Watam. The very mayor-like figure kind of shows up and is like, hey, would you like to make free money? I'll come to your town and pick up all your junk, and you'll just get free money.
That sounds great.
And after that, you basically wake up in this cave, and this ghost is standing next to you, and the ghost is like, hey, are you awake? You're like, yeah, I'm awake. He's like, oh, you should figure out how to go outside. And you're like, okay. And then you go outside, and then you ask the ghost, you're like, who are you? And he's like, I'm a ghost. And then he disappears. It's really good.
Great.
And then you go outside, and there's this little town. Everyone hates you because they think of you as the beast who lives in the cave. And they're like, oh, actually, you're not so bad. You don't seem as scary as we were told in the legends. And the first thing you have to do is you walk across this little bridge to get to the village, and you're just walking along, and then you break the bridge, and the villagers are like, you broke the bridge. All of our crops are over there. You got to fix it. So that's what I'm doing right now. I don't know anything beyond that.
And you're doing that by like jumping around and like
you jump around.
Like,
you like there are little collectibles that you give to people. Will lead to like further little areas where you can find more stuff. I haven't solved obviously this objective yet. So, but what's really good? Sorry, I just bumped my mic. What's really good is when you first start the game, after the little cinematic, your first objective is like wake up, And it's like you wake up and it's like objective complete.
Nice. Good. I mean, the whole thing definitely has like a real Keita Takahashi vibe, mm-hmm. or like a Loco Roco, or it feels pulled. The art style feels completely in that lineage.
Totally. Totally.
Yeah. I'm playing it as well. Also within the 2 hour time limit, because it's out on the 24th. So we can't spoil, we can't mm-hmm. spoil things.
Yeah. I don't want to spoil anything.
First 2 hours. It is a very much adventure game design. Like, okay. It is solve this, do that, find the right object for this, have conversations with the little townsfolk, have conversations. You're running around
like
and jumping around.
It's a 2D
platformer
vibe.
Mm-hmm. vibe, but very much like adventure game structure. Like, you mm-hmm. got a little mission, you got a little problem you got to solve, whether it's on this screen or that screen or over here or up the mountain or down the mountain or in the town or in a secret cave. There's secrets. There's a lot of secrets. And you have an inventory system too, actually, in this game.
Okay.
You have different hats that you can wear to do different things.
I just got my first one.
What's
you
the
have
hat
your first
do?
One?
I haven't tried it on yet. I was just playing, and
then
I
interrupted
for
you
podcast,
but with this podcast you had to record.
Which, God,
you gotta wear a lot of hats.
Piku Niku
in your life, Natalie, as your job, you have to wear hats.
I do wear a lot of hats.
Yeah, with your podcast.
And my little Piku Niku friend, also wears.
Did you name
hats.
Him or them?
I haven't named them yet. I don't know.
Is that a thing, or are you just saying generally in your life?
In your life? I don't know.
I don't know if there was like a mechanic to name the Piku Niku friend.
Oh, no. There's no mechanic for it. Okay. I just have been calling it my little friend.
Okay.
Or the beast, I guess. The beast works.
The beast. The tiny beast.
The tiny beast.
Yeah.
Well, sounds interesting. I'm very charmed by the general look, but I'm also always like, all right, does this sustain? Right? Like, is this a cool thing I want to play for an hour, or is this the thing I want to play for 10 hours? 10 hours is a long time.
That's
I have no
time.
Idea how long this game is, to be
clear.
Yeah,
I will say I'm really glad it's out right now mm-hmm. when there's fewer games kind of coming out, because I know this would have been crushed in a different time because of, this does look like a cute deep state adventure platformer mm-hmm. game. But I am excited to play more, and I'm also excited that like it's out at a time when I want to be given codes to interesting weird little things that
totally.
I will give those couple of hours and see if there's there as we say.
Totally. I should note one of the devs on it is Callum Bowen, who you hear me say at the end of every Monday episode.
Hey,
shout out to Bowen for letting us use Drag Miss You. Bowen is one of the devs
right.
in the game. Presumably,
I didn't know it was
presumably
the same Bowen.
Yeah, Callum Bowen is the real name of Bowen, the musician. Yes.
Sector Dub, that's
so
the name
I guess,
of the
you know, team shout outs to Bowen for listening to the track Piku Niku off the doesn't
the
really
game,
it doesn't
Piku
really work
Niku.
As well. Have either of you done the co-op stuff in this game?
Not yet. I was planning on doing some this week. I'll let you know how that is.
Check in next week.
I'll check in with some Piku Niku.
Awesome. Anything else? Anyone else play anything over the weekend worth chatting about?
Well, I know all of you want to hear about my exploits. I've
uh-huh.
We do.
Your exploits just generally? What are there new specific exploits?
What kind of shit you get up to now?
Yeah, wait, why are you laughing? What'd you do?
I watched TV this weekend.
Okay. We have other podcasts for TV now.
Oh yeah, we have a podcast for TV.
We built a whole different one. We have two different ones we could do this on.
Oh yeah, okay. To be continued.
That was a teaser.
Yeah.
I would just say that I've felt several sparks of joy this past weekend.
Great.
Cool, good.
Good. Okay.
Yeah. Uh-huh. We've all been on Twitter. I know what that means. I'm paying attention.
Well, I know you were watching that while you were also watching something else. Or maybe you tweeted about something while you then watched something else immediately.
I did watch something else, too. Wait, what? Mario?
Oh, my God.
I feel
Rustin,
like
I thought you said you were hosting this
let's
podcast.
Let's take a break. Yeah, I am. And you know what? We're going
to
take a break.
Just trying to make a segue.
And when we come
after.
Back, we're going
to
talk about AGDQ.
Oh, I love
bit.
That.
And we're going to answer some questions. And we're going to cut out of here. Patrick,
why?
We're going to take a break. Just take a breath. Yeah. Drink your coffee.
Pass me my Diet Coke, please.
Yeah, okay. Oh, my
we're
God.
We're not brought to you by Diet Coke, but.
Oh, my. BRB.
Pass my cola.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
All right, we're back. Are we good? Have we gotten the punchiness out of us? Have we found our center? Don't give me that look.
Oh,
wow!
What was my look?
You give me a look.
What kind of look? I did it unconsciously, so I'd like to know what you perceived.
I'll talk later.
Okay.
So last week was AGDQ, Awesome Games Done Quick, which at this point has become like such a standard part of the year in a weird way. It's like totally. Kick it off twice a year. Summer Games Done Quick, Awesome Games Done Quick. I always really enjoy sitting down and watching stuff. I'm curious for y'all. I mean, for people who maybe don't know, it is a speedrunning kind of
event.
Marathon, perhaps.
Yeah, it's like an exhibition more than a competition, right? Like, it's rare. I mean, there are moments of competition. There are occasionally races and things like that. But by
all
and
in
large,
good fun.
Yeah, it's mostly just like, hey, all of these little speedrunning communities exist in the world, right? So there's like people who run Mario games and people who run Prey and people who run like a billion different things.
Yeah.
And they tend to be part of their own little communities. They all come together twice a year to raise money for charity and like show off like the runs that they do and like the kind of like give people insight into some of the cool tricks, whether that is just playing a game super efficiently or like completely breaking it by, you know, glitching out and taking advantage of all sorts of exploits and a billion other things. And I'm curious for those of you who watched it, if you had any runs stick out in your mind so that we could recommend them to people.
Hmm.
What was everyone's favorite stuff so far?
Well, I had a couple.
Yeah.
I had a couple cool ones. All right, there was a Prey Moon Crash run that was wonderful and amazing, partially because that particular game, well, we all know I like that game quite a bit. Uh-huh. I thought the DLC was amazing. I thought it brought in a lot of people who maybe didn't appreciate Prey for its brilliance, and they were able to appreciate it a little bit better with this DLC that has a little bit of more randomization of elements in it. And that runner actually had notes. He actually had to keep notes for how many, you know, 96 combinations where X item could be, and that's for every like element of the game.
Holy
so
heck.
He had to sort of reroute as he was going
to
do this. He also shouted out QA, which was really nice. He was like, QA did a really good job on this game. And I think people, you know, I'm paraphrasing a little bit here, but he was saying, like, I think people really take a dump on QA here at AGDQ a lot of times.
Sure do.
I think QA
like
did a great job.
Parts, honestly, is like, I like AGDQ a lot, but like one of the most frustrating things is like when someone finds some exploitable glitch that 1% of players or like 0.1% of players will hit and like, ugh, lazy devs, like left this shit in.
Woof.
Like, y'all, come on.
Yeah, but that also makes you able to do the thing
Let's
that
you
you're
do your trick.
Doing. Like, it's, you know, oh,
yeah.
God.
So
that
this person was awesome. That was it was a really good run.
Right.
Really fun to watch. They also had a Bethesda CM community manager for the game there sort of with him. So she was sort of able to be like, oh my God, we took 9 months to make this, or we, you know, so it had a really great back and forth between, you know, somebody who was rerouting on the run, which I always find really interesting. And they're not just going from memory. They are actually sort of like processing so many variables about what will make this go faster. That's always fascinating to watch. And like a dev was there, you know, talking about a little bit of the sort of background.
Cool.
I also spoke with a runner. It was not running at AGDQ, but a person affectionately dubbed Dance Dad, who was dancing in the sort of interstitials between runs. He was absolutely lovely and was sort of encouraging people to give donations. He was sort of like doing dances in between to the music. And that was really fun. And then, of course, I feel like the three of us had a beautiful moment the other day when we were watching the Bloodborne run.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, the Bloodborne
run. We had a moment.
It was the same dude. It was Jesus.
Jesus, it's Toast.
It's Toast, yeah. Who did a run last year also, who did like a all bosses run or something like that last year. And this year he just did an any percent run.
Mm-hmm.
That was really touch and go there for a minute. He
yeah.
came up against the One Reborn, which is the boss that you just did, Natalie, on the stream last week. And just like kept losing and like got way off track. And that is always the most stressful shit.
Yeah.
Like streaming games is already stressful. Like, I don't know. Patrick, you can speak to this because obviously we've streamed up here, but you and I both have been in front of the giant bomb audience, which is maybe a little harsher in terms of like, oh yeah, you fucking suck at video games, dude.
Oh, well, just the Dan Reichert saga in Mario Maker
right.
was
right.
very acutely that in which you have everyone who has seen a run of how the level works. A whole lot of the level is me trying to figure it out. It is me trying to interact with chat without getting spoiled by chat. I mean, like, yeah, the amount of things I remember juggling with that one. And then specifically, there was a moment in that whole arc where I don't think it was the last, like, the New Year's Eve arc, but it was one of them where, anyway, we got featured on the front page of Twitch.
Oh,
and,
man.
You know, I didn't have moderators because usually the amount of people I was streaming to every day was just something where, like, I think I had one or two people that would help occasionally, but otherwise, like, I kind of handled it because it wasn't that wild. But then we got featured because we were raising money along with it. And, you know, I saw, like, the viewer count shoot up from, like, 1,200 to, like, 8,200, you know, like it just kept like climbing. And it was just, and it was at the reason it was climbing because it was getting featured because people were tweeting that like it was hitting some sort of apex. I can't remember what it was exactly because I've blacked out that whole part of my memory. But then it was just like me having to like try and stay focused and concentrating and also realizing that the number is like exponentially going higher to a point that I'm getting an audience that is wildly out of my control, doesn't understand the context of what's happening. Yeah, I remember that I had to finally just close the window and be like, it is what it is. I apologize for whatever terrible stuff happens in that chat, but I cannot do this right now.
Yeah, and so like I felt really, not bad, but like I felt for.
Yeah.
When it mounts, right? Like every mistake compounds, right? The moment you make the first mistake, you're thinking about that first mistake. And so even though I'm not a speedrunner, I feel like you and I especially, Austin, can understand the notion of making a mistake and then then there's the performative act part, right? Like it's not you're just playing, right? You're not just doing it for yourself. You also have to be talking, explain, like there's the whole thing you're juggling. And
I mean, I think all of us can feel it to some degree, but I just like the different Waypoint audience is rooting for you. The general Twitch audience can
most people are like, want to see your ass fucking face plant.
Yep.
So,
totally.
Which true. Like I'm with you sometimes. Uh-huh. All right. Chat, I get it.
We all watch Nailed It, you know? Like so it's like in a situation like that, I was like, please just pull it together. Like, I want to believe in you so bad. I know you've done this before so many times in practice. You can do it. Yeah. And Jesus and Toast came through obviously and like still crushed that game.
And he's such a good commentator as well. Yeah. Like he just has just really fun running like, all right, hey, how you doing? All right. And you're dead. Like a really fun sort of
He's like a little intense for me, but he backs up his bullshit in a way that's hard to like argue against.
Yeah,
it's weird. I think one of the things that's interesting is like what different people like from stuff. Like one of my favorite people was DJ Fatbody, who did Sonic 1, who really 100% showed up, and it was like some old school hip hop like b-boy shit.
Love it.
Like shouting out people who've been in the Sonic speedrunning community for a decade plus, and there was like. There was the same degree of intensity, but a different sort of intensity that I liked a little bit more than Jesus. But like I can respect the showmanship so much. I can also respect the other side of it, right? Which is there was a great runner who did a Mega Man, popular Mega Man ROM hack called Mega Man Unlimited, which is like a fan game that's set between Mega Man and Mega Man X that like connects the two series together. Oh, and there's a sub mode called like Z Prototype where you play as Zero with like the sword or like a prototype version of Zero with the sword. And he was like, you know, now I don't want to say he was like awkward, but he had a degree of like he knew he was there to run the game. And so he was like, I'm not going to talk during my run. I have a great couch. I'm going to put up my headset. I'm going to focus on the game and knock it out. And he did that. And then afterwards, he was really thankful and like, you know, shouted out everybody. Yeah. It was a really great. It was just like a really sweet and good run. It was like a fantastic run. He fucking nailed it. And it was a fun game to watch, which is the other thing I like about AGDQ is putting things on my radar that I didn't know or seeing entire games that I've never seen all of before. Mm-hmm. There was someone who played through N++ in a co-op mode.
Yeah, that was great.
Which is gorgeous. And N+ is one of my favorite games. And I just never got around to N++. So it was cool to see those levels, especially with the co-op stuff. And then even there was something else that I saw that was like, this is just cool for me to see the thing, even though it's not actually telling me the story or anything like that. It's just like filling in the gaps in my knowledge. Oh, this is a really silly one. Mega Man for DOS, which is terrible garbage game that I've only ever seen the first screen of, which is this bright blue, terrible, ugly, like blue cyan and cyan and pink. And you're being chased by this like robot dog. And I've seen a million people play that screen because it's hilarious because you just get jumped. But this person did the full run of the entire game. And I was
like, that was Lizzie Cat or
I think so. Something like that. So that was cool. I there's a bunch of them that were just a blast to watch. And
yeah, that was one of my faves.
Actually, anything else that really stood out for me is a big one. The Jack 3 one is very funny because I'm 90% sure everyone on the couch is super stoned.
Yeah.
They're just constantly laughing at everything. It feels extremely like you walked into someone's basement. It feels like extreme. Do y'all know the hot couch guy?
Wait.
Meme? No. I'm not going to do the Chapo hot couch guy. I'm not going to explain the hot couch guy. It's everyone in their life has had the dude whose apartment you always went to hang out with. Whose couch was always way hotter than it ever needed to be, and there's always like a DVD menu on the screen, and he has like shitty
what
warm
do you mean
beer.
Couch was hot, like
literally
warm,
like
warm,
like uncomfortable.
Somebody's butt was on that couch right before
always.
You.
Always.
Oh,
anyway,
got you.
Were extremely that. If you know what
that's
that
really
is.
Good.
But that
Mario
was still
Sunshine
fun.
Bingo. That was really cool.
Wait, what was it?
Mario Sunshine Bingo.
Oh, I missed this.
So there's like a bingo card. There's two runners and they're sort of racing. I guess it's a race to get the bingo of like different objectives, like this many coins or this, you know, kind of thing. That was really fun. And Panga Pangea, who has like been in the Kaizo scene forever. Was one of the runners on that. And that was very fun to watch. So
yeah, that stuff is so good. I you know, it's like one of those things like I just love at this point being able to go through the YouTube and see everything that I missed and try to catch up and like pick out a few things and put them on the background while I do work, you know?
Yeah.
You know,
there were some intense like 9 hour long runs. The Final Fantasy
making a face.
One of those numbers.
There was a Final Fantasy IX run that I heard was really good.
Final Fantasy IX.
We're making a habit this podcast.
I know.
Of Final Fantasy.
Final Fantasy. Which Final Fantasy? What? One of them?
There's been too many.
There was a Final Fantasy IV race.
Oh, wow. The hot, hot take section.
Whoa.
Natalie says no more
there
Final Fantasy. You made
by,
enough already.
There were nine.
George,
by
why
the
is it called
PS1?
Final Fantasy?
That's wild. Think about that.
Yes.
That's so many games by PS1.
I know.
20 years ago,
since
in fact.
And then. We've had six.
At least, because you have to count the other stuff. You have to.
I know, there's
like
all the other stuff. There's all the other shit.
Yeah.
But, and Kingdom Hearts.
That doesn't count. That just has Final Fantasy.
Just generally, Kingdom Hearts.
Kano begs to differ.
Wow.
As I get ready to play Kingdom Hearts 3.
I know, yeah, right? Come on, that's
I'm
out
stressed.
This month. That's out soon.
I'm stressed
they
about
announced
that.
They announced that they are like releasing the epilogue to it days after it releases.
I'm so stressed.
Which will prevent it from leaking. Why
I'm
stressed
for
stressed?
Just Kingdom Hearts Twitter.
Okay,
and,
you're not a Kingdom Hearts person, though, are you?
I played the first one.
Okay, so no.
I am with Natalie, though. As someone that, you know, I played the first two. I'm cautiously interested in the third one, but I am stressed for the fans.
Yeah, me too.
Like, I am. Like, if this game... What if this game sucks? What if it sucks? That's terrible.
I hope it's great. I really, really do.
I don't think it'll suck.
But like,
it probably won't, but, like, what? You know what? What if it's average?
Yeah, that's even worse.
I think
I'm just saying, like...
But what's that mean?
When's the next one?
But what's that mean? I know.
You're getting six more mobile games.
I know. But what would it even mean for it to be average? Is it, like, the story
I don't know.
Is bad? Is
it's
it, like...
Okay.
The
story's been bad.
Okay.
Nordis!
Right, Natalie, all right, so you started out.
Nordis!
You started. Okay,
yeah, who,
you started
Natalie
out.
Natalie got Nordis.
I thought we were trying to put that aside
we
and just
were.
Empathize with the Kingdom Hearts community.
We were trying, and then Natalie's
no,
out here throwing
no, what
bows.
What I meant is the story
yeah,
has been
shovel,
bad
Natalie.
In the past.
Wow,
like
you said the same thing, but worse.
Did it get better?
Most improved.
Who could say? I'm still.
We went through this. We did. Were you not on that podcast? Maybe she wasn't on that. You weren't on the podcast where we tried to be nice about Kingdom Hearts. We were looking forward to our Looking Forward podcast. It was just me.
That was just me, and, you, and Rob.
Yeah, and we tried. We were like, all right, we're going to be real honest about this in a way that, like, yeah, we've all dunked on Kingdom Hearts in the past, but we understand this means a lot to a lot of people, and that, like, even though it's not my thing, I understand people, da 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 da. And now you're out here just
well,
like...
Well, I missed that podcast.
Oh, my...
True.
Yeah.
But,
well,
doing
but, your own
but,
one
but,
now.
But... I do think Kingdom Hearts 3 will be interesting.
Okay. Okay.
All right.
All right.
All right.
Woo! Somebody cut me off.
Have we measured the hole that Natalie's in? It's like, deep. How deep is it?
You know, we started, we were like, oh, Waypoint fans are nice. Nah.
I'm not saying, let me just be very clear. I'm not saying all of the story is bad. I'm saying there have been certain games where the story is just...
You just said you only played the first one, like 30 seconds
this
ago.
This is what I've heard.
It's word on the street.
Word on the street is
Kingdom Hearts story's been bad in the past.
Natalie read in the chat.
Send your letters to... Just don't send your letters.
Don't send any letters.
Here's what I'll say. I did... At the end of last year, I sent out a Twitter request, or I sent out a Google request that became a Twitter screenshot that became a tweet.
Wait, which hole are we talking about now?
You did a Google request, by which what you mean is you searched for something on Google.
Yes.
And then you took a screenshot of that and you tweeted it. Yes.
That's sometimes when you say, hey, Google, that's a Google request, I guess. That's a Google request.
Hey, Google.
Four. What for?
For a full-length movie of all of the Kingdom Hearts games, so I wouldn't have to play them. Mm-hmm. I haven't started yet, but
there are cutscene videos.
Yeah. This week, a lot of people linked me some really comprehensive YouTube playlists with like all these videos and like explainers and podcasts and all these things like that. So when does Kingdom Hearts come out? In like 2 weeks?
It's soon.
Okay.
Yeah.
That sounds like a waypoint.
My goal
to me.
Is to have learned the entire story of Kingdom Hearts by then so I can play 3.
How long is the video? How long are these videos?
Hours. Days.
Yeah. Right. Oh.
So I'll see you on the other side and I'll be playing Kingdom Hearts 3.
Are you? Are you going to play?
If I can watch all these videos in time.
Damn.
So Kingdom Hearts Stan, potentially.
Really what I want to do is jump cut 3 weeks from now where you're just in tears over some Kingdom Hearts.
Natalie and I are doing our own Kingdom Hearts podcast so that we could just keep talking to each other about Kingdom Hearts.
Yeah.
I'll be on that podcast. I'm not going to play the game, but I'll listen. I'll ask the questions. Okay. Tell me everything you know about Kingdom Hearts. Like
we might have
Sora.
Sora. That's what Riku.
Ansem. And some.
I know some shit about Kingdom Hearts.
Fresh and clean.
That's right. Fresh. Okay.
Is that right?
I have no idea. Was that the name of the song?
It's something and clean, right?
Simple and clean.
Fresh and clean is closer to a rap track.
That's an Outkast song.
That's a different song. Yo, someone please put Andre 3000 in Kingdom Hearts 3. Kingdom Hearts 3000. What's good? Let's go.
That's beautiful.
Someone's already done a mashup, right?
100%. Right? Or at least
simple
I just
and
if the
clean,
internet is good, they
Andre
will have done it.
I just want to see Outkast in like Kingdom Hearts style.
I want an Outkast world.
Outkast world would be good.
The Outkast realm.
Who made that Outkast movie? Who was that? Disney.
Wait, which one?
The one that they did the whole album from. It was like a musical. It was a musical. What's the name of that? What was the name of that?
I don't know. I'm not an Outkast.
Oh my,
Dan.
Idlewild.
Idlewild.
You should be an Outkast. Yeah, I'll call them up. I'll be like, yo, Disney, buy the rights to this and then put it in Kingdom Hearts 3.
Give me that DLC. I'll take it.
It was Universal Pictures. So it's not going to be in that game, unfortunately.
Never mind.
Yeah.
We've been on Disney. They should put us in Kingdom Hearts 3.
Yeah, right?
Honestly, Waypoint World.
Waypoint World. What's good?
Welcome to Waypoint Land.
I'm.
As soon as you walk in, you're asked to leave and go to another room.
Yeah, that's what's
going to
happen.
They tell you to set up your equipment somewhere else and/or put it at your desk.
Sora shows up and just, yeah, can you? Sora's job is to move boxes up 4 flights of stairs and hide expensive audio equipment in secret file cabinets and then hide
going
the keys.
From
that's
lobby
what we did.
One of the control room getting Norded?
But yeah, we've been Norded.
We have been.
The whole time we've been.
I can't
here.
Believe they put a fucking mini fridge in there already.
I can't either.
Believe it.
We should have done that. That's on us, honestly.
The disrespect.
Day one, Monday. We cleared out Friday at 6.
We were like, they're not going to be here Monday.
They had a mini fridge in there.
We're like, they're not going to be set up on Monday.
That means they had a mini fridge on deck.
They had
it was ready for
that. That's disrespect. That's a lack of priority from all y'all. If I was there, there would have been a mini fridge in that goddamn room.
Here's the thing.
We tried.
We did.
We tried to get a mini fridge?
I don't know. But with
all
the
blow... You're just on one today, Natalie. You're just saying shit.
With all the blowback that we had when I tried to get a fucking
trash can.
Yeah, fair. We couldn't get a trash can.
I had
can.
To buy my own trash can, which they own now.
Wait, you didn't take the trash can
I
now?
Didn't take the trash can.
We just gave the keys back, too. We can't go get that trash can. We lost furniture. There's TVs in there we bought.
Trash cans are expensive,
lights?
Too.
The lights?
That those we lights buy. Are
those
nice.
Are, those are not equipment. Ours. Those are, I'll draw okay. the line there.
All right.
But they get the soundproofing.
But we lost them in terms of we can't use those lights anymore.
I bet we could get those lights again.
You think
Danny
so?
Is good. No, Danny could get us lights.
They're permanently in that room.
No, no, he took them down. He's taking them down.
Yeah, don't you don't know. Jason yet, said but... he was going to hide them for us.
Oh, he did say that. He was going to hide them.
Oh, that's so nice.
The homie.
That's the thing is, like, we've gotten into this like post-apocalyptic moment here where we,
where
are,
we have to create allies.
There's favor
really
trading.
Do.
There's conversations happening. We went to a mixer the other night, Natalie.
We did. Oh, my God. Austin and I went to a mixer of fellow folks who had also been slighted.
Mm-hmm. Slighted is strong. Whose space had been requisitioned.
Yes.
We still work here. All right.
As far as we know.
We still work here. Right now. We're in here. I'm going to lock the door. They can't come kick us out.
Yeah, as honestly.
Barricade that shit. We need to.
Control room B is ours.
New bunker.
That's not true. We have to be out of here in 35 minutes.
Yeah, we don't have much time.
We have to book this room now. It's a different situation.
True. It's not the way
the point is. The point is, when video games come out, I'm going to be excited because it could be a nice distraction from the politicking of the media world.
I love video games.
We should read some emails and then end this podcast. What do you say?
Yes, please.
Yeah.
Thank you, Patrick. What is this? You can reach this.
I can't, actually.
Oh, my God. Franklin writes, if you have emails, you can send them into gaming@vice.com with the subject question. This one comes in from Franklin asking the question everyone's been wanting to know the answer to for a long time. I'm currently playing Parkitect, a theme park mm-hmm. building sim, and I that want to create fun. A park themed around my favorite podcast.
Oh, God.
What yeah. kind of ride would represent each one of you in the Waypoint Zone? If it is a roller coaster, then briefly describe it.
Okay. This is a great question.
It's a great question. More questions like this, to be honest.
Yes, these are fun.
I would like to be a log flume.
Oh.
I would like to be a water ride, basically. It's a cool water ride because there's a lot flowing. There's a lot of changes in life. There's a lot of ups and downs. There's a lot of thrills. And there's a big drop at the end.
Sorry, Natalie is laughing because someone just tried to come.
They sure did.
As soon as he said that we were squatting in here, somebody just tried to.
Seconds later.
He tried.
It says waypoint outside on the thing
Wait,
right now.
Wait, that was locked for all of us.
They probably have
No, he has access. I've emailed. We're going to get access. Log flume, good answer.
Great answer. Awesome. Good answer. Do you know?
I'm not ready yet.
Patrick, do you know? I'm thinking.
Patrick, do you know?
I'm like one of those that just turns around over and over.
Like a spinning cup?
Oh, the pirate ships that goes up and down?
Or a pirate ship? Are you one of those pirate ships?
Man, it does. You can be an apple. I don't care. I'm just constantly nauseous, and I'm not sure which direction I'm going.
I got you.
Nor did.
But I just keep going.
Just keep on going.
Regardless. Just like the ride. It doesn't seem to end. You want to get off. You feel like shit, but sorry.
You're still here.
I am one of those, I feel like I'm something of like a Pirates of the Caribbean.
Oh, like a world
an
ride?
Adventure
like
ride.
An adventure ride.
That's an adventure ride in which there's a scene, there's a narrative. You don't completely know what's going on. Mm-hmm. There's some false alarms. There's some real alarms, and mostly you're just riding the wave.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of where I'm at right now.
I got you. I am, you know those coasters that are like...
Oh, you're a roller coaster?
Oh, yeah, you know it. You know I'm a roller coaster. You know those ones that have the like hydraulics where...
Excuse me?
Yes.
You know where like it can just launch.
Yeah,
it's just like it doesn't have to do the climb.
Oh, it just is from station.
Yeah.
To
or no, it feels like I'm like, oh yeah, I'm just kind of doing okay. And then it's like boom.
Yes.
That is where I have to be. Like I have to be that because it has to be the situation where it's like, oh yeah, this seems totally fun. Ah, yeah, you're going. You're going full speed. Go. That has to be. Oh, you still climb some.
You're like chatting to your friend.
Yeah, that's exactly
next to you, and then you're both like, woo.
Yeah, absolutely. Also, I think it's probably like what's the sci-fi mountain?
Space Mountain.
Space Mountain, where it's like indoors.
Oh,
is it
all right.
Nighttime?
It's
all
nighttime,
dark?
All dark.
You can't darker. See what's like going
goth,
on.
Yeah.
Goth boy click. You
like,
know it.
Afraid of being beheaded?
100%. Just constantly afraid that you're going to just hit your head on some shit inside. 100%.
That sounds tight.
Traumatic.
I read that,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it's fantastic. I love it. It's so good. All right. What do you think about Rob? What would Rob be?
Rob is the Tower of Terror.
Oh, mm-hmm. Wow. That's
a
good AKA.
I was going to say Rob is a show.
What'd you say? Oh, a live show?
Yeah.
It could be both. The Tower of Terror has a sort of live show component.
There's a narrative to it.
Yeah. And there are actors and like things, right? Mm-hmm. So like I could see Rob being the Tower.
Got to be able to get a drink on this, Rob.
Oh, that's true.
Rob,
he's drinking
Rob,
his coffee as it goes down, and it just
Rob might be what's it called, the lazy river?
The lazy river is not bad either.
With just people be drinking on the
lazy
river.
Yeah, because you
can
bring a drink on the lazy river.
Yeah,
like Rob could be like the tramp. You know what I mean? Like takes you, like you, he puts you on your back.
Yeah,
he puts you on his back. He carries you around.
Yeah,
and also
he gets you there.
He gets you there, and he's also just like,
it ain't fancy, but you know what?
You know what?
Stop complaining.
Stop
There's some,
complaining.
Like sightseeing on the way.
Yeah,
hell you
yeah.
Can see the parking lot.
Totally. Totally. Shout outs to Rob Zachty.
Wait, what's Kato?
What is Kato? Kato.
I'm like that Men in Black ride where you're shooting shit. It's not really fun, but you get.
I like it.
The Buzz Lightyear after blaster.
The Buzz Lightyear joint. Yeah.
Those are tight.
Those are cool. Those are cool.
I just rode all of those rides like a week ago.
You just went with like Danica, right? Did you?
No. Danica didn't get to go because she had to work. So I went with Ben.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
We didn't get to go on Space Mountain though because Ben was afraid.
Yo. Why?
Called out.
What are you
He was afraid of being beheaded.
Oh, Patrick. What is this energy in this room? I don't know. I don't know what to do with this energy.
We need to exercise this room.
Oh,
yo, Natalie almost spilled an entire Diet Coke. I'm going to move it. I'm in charge of this now. I'm putting it over
was
here.
Was that a Harry Potter spell? Did you go there too?
No, we need right. some sage in here though.
We left the sage in the other room.
Oh, oh no!
We did. We had some sage in the other room and it's gone now.
God. It's gone.
Did you not bring it?
No.
Fuck.
Oh, fuck.
Can't believe we left him the sage.
Anyway.
I'm going to ask you another question, and this one's not as exciting.
For the record, I love my boyfriend.
Shout outs.
Shout outs.
You didn't want him to lose his head on Space Mountain.
Yeah.
That's love.
That's
love. That is love.
It's like that Chance song.
I would have still gone on the ride. Meet me at the end.
Wow. This one comes in from Autumn, who says, I'm a new writer on games and have been following much of the advice you've given to other questions throughout the past year. I've reluctantly created the Twitter at the Autumn Wright, WRIGHT. I'm working on a portfolio and blog style website, and I've begun pitching around smaller outlets that highlight new trans voices. Shout outs to Capsule Crit. Shout outs to Capsule Crit for real. That Dia runs that Dia,
Hell
who's
yeah.
been featured
Hell
here
yeah.
on Waypoint a bunch. It feels like my biggest constraint to writing for bigger outlets is that I don't have access to many relevant games. Mm-hmm. I only have a Switch and an iPad, which would be fine, but I don't have enough money to play many newer releases. While I see there are pieces written at Capsule Crit, Deorbital, Unwinnable, and sometimes Waypoint on older games, I'm missing the chance to write about many games that have brief windows of discourse around their release. Mm-hmm. If I could get a few bigger publications, likely about newer games, I would start to be able to use some of that income to buy more games and consoles. How can I begin to break in to this cycle of affording to write on games while having limited resources to play games? And that is from Autumn.
That's a great question.
It's a really good question, and it's one that like is not that far back. I was just in this situation not that long ago, to the degree that like I definitely took like the money I had made from writing for Paste and GameSpot and like bought a PS4 so I could then do a PS4 review. Mm-hmm. Like that is like the Battlefield Hardline review mm-hmm. that I wrote for Paste. I didn't want to buy the PS4. They sent a PS4 copy instead of sending a PC copy. And so I was like, well, fuck, I guess I'm going to spend this money that I've been saving mm-hmm. on a PS4. It is a real hustle. And it is one of those things that genuinely can be a blockade for new young voices who don't necessarily come from places of privilege. And I will say that as someone who has now crossed over from being on the kind of freelance side to being not just in the industry, but being an EIC and looking at budgets and seeing what traffic gets done. Like the very, 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 very frustrating thing is like not that many people want to read about retro games, or not even retro games, games from earlier this year, mm-hmm. right? Like even something big like Monster Hunter World. If we had run a Monster Hunter World piece in October after that game launched in January, it would have done no traffic unless it was truly... Like, even if it was the best piece written on our site that month, right?
News
we're talking
breaking.
About Say
unless it was like news breaking. Or...
Yeah, unless it was like about a scandal, you know? And so, and for that reason, editors are very cautious about greenlighting those pieces unless you're someone like Unwinnable, who is subscription based, who is an outlet that is driven by returning fans who are giving them a monthly subscription instead of being driven by hits and display ads and all that other shit. And I think it's something like really broken with the industry in a real way because it does limit discourse. That said, I think that like the outlets you talked about are the ones to start pitching to, Autumn, because they will run that stuff more often than not. And I guess it should be pretty clear, we just run way less freelance stuff than we did this time last year, and especially, you know, in 2017.
2 years ago,
when we were running way, way, way more stuff. And just like our budget situation changed, it shifted into other directions, it got reduced here and there. And so we had to get really hard and like serious about this stuff. Like, okay, if we can only run 5 freelance pieces a week, if that, what are those going to be? How do we justify continuing to have this budget when the stuff that we've been greenlighting has not been doing that traffic because the audiences are just not there? And that's not a really positive answer, I know.
I have 2 pieces of advice.
Yeah.
One is know what a news peg is and know exactly what people are looking for if you're sending in pitches. Know the publication really well. That's not something that happens immediately. It just means reading a lot of whatever publication it is. It means knowing sort of what they generally like to talk about, what their general approach is. And a news peg is something I'll let Patrick talk about because obviously he knows that even more intimately than I do. My second piece of advice is to absolutely have another source of income, have another job that is a little more stable and will give you what you need to live. That is an unfortunate and horrible thing about our culture. I don't know if you're American, but that's my advice to another American person, because this is rough to be a freelancer. It is really, really hard. I have all the sympathy in the world for freelancers, but it is generally a good idea to have another source of income, a different job that you can do. That will not be completely dependent on something like traffic.
Yeah, like as part of that pitching process of like, you know, you decide to take a gamble on, okay, I'm going to buy Red Dead and I'm going to go all in on doing some pitches is, I would echo parts of what Danielle said, is that to think of the websites you're pitching for as a business. Think about, you know, that doesn't mean clickbait, but it's like, you know, it's somewhere in between. You do want people to click, right? And so it's like finding a way to think about, what does well on that, you know, study what has done well on that site. Like there will be things that aren't just, you know, like a breaking news thing that you're not going to have an angle on. You may find like, oh, there are certain angles of cultural criticism that seem to resonate really well with this audience. Mm-hmm. And so people are more likely to approve, especially unproven voices, when you've done the homework on what that publication does well. Maybe that's part of your pitch, is like, hey, like, you know, you've had success in the past with pitches like this. Here's how this kind of slots in and how I think it builds on the work that your publication has done, is like trying to find ways to maximize the risk you're going to take financially with the game that you're choosing to go all in on. If like maybe you're doing one every couple of months and just sort of like targeting, like this is going to be the game I'm going to try and build is like look at their business. How are they making money? You know, it's the same way you look at Waypoint and be like, yo, like I have a labor angle on this. Like that's more likely to get our attention on a pitch because that's a keyword, you know, that like it's something we hit all the time. And so studying what places are interested in, what places find that does good traffic for them, like the way you navigate all those things, and then land on a pitch that hopefully doesn't, you know, you're not fully selling your soul in the process. I think it's probably a way that you try and thread that needle. This is interesting because like the way, you know, I got started, you know, long before probably anyone else in this room on this stuff, and the way I got in, other than just like being very lucky in the people that I knew, like I never could have known I'd be in a chat room with people that would go on to be in positions of power, like, you know, 10 years later. That's just pure blind luck. But I also excitedly took, I'll just review the bad game. Yeah. Like I'll just review the shit. Like, and so I spent, you know, the stuff that I was doing in high school, the stuff I was doing in college before I was transitioning into actually doing reported stuff and getting into what would become my career and my actual career, was I used to do a lot of reviews for like GameSpy and other outlets, where that was back during the mandate was we review everything. Mm-hmm. So it's like, hey, Do you want to review every version of Harry Potter? Because this was back in an era where it wasn't just a copy paste, like all the versions were the same on every platform.
Right.
No, like the PS2, Xbox, and GameCube ones are the same, but like the Game Boy one's different. You know, like the PC one's different. And so I just give me Harry Potter. I will review 7 Harry Potters.
Yeah.
And it was good. It was good money. Like, because the way like the way it would like pay out would be like you didn't get paid a lot for the main review. But then you'd get like bonuses based on like if you like could checkbox all these other like versions you were doing. So like that was a lot of like that took rather than having to get like a normal job in college. Like that's what I did was like I reviewed bad games. But I was taking advantage of a system where no one else wanted to play these games. There were a lot of them and I was willing to do the grunt work of just send me the garbage.
And
like,
that was
I will play the garbage.
Still,
and that just doesn't exist
anymore.
Yeah,
like Polygon doesn't have a reviews editor, right? Like major,
and they just don't review those games, right? Like
why bother?
Places are just much more frugal, both financially and in terms of what their coverage, because the model has changed, and also they just have a better understand. We just analytics metrics.
Yeah.
Previously it was just either throwing stuff at the wind if it was on a website, or it was a magazine in which it was subscription based. Yeah. So it was the same thing of having it didn't actually matter what you write. As long as people were
right, as long as
there
was like a good set of cover stories that kept people subscribing month after month, because that's what they were subscribing for was like the exclusive stuff, the rare stuff, and like yeah, hey, there's some good reviews in here too, awesome, cool. But like it, they didn't. I was reading every review in every issue of EGM or whatever, right? Even if it was you know a 30-hour you know if it was like a sports game I knew I'd never play or a JRPG I knew I would never play for Saturn, even though I didn't have a Saturn, you know, like well I gotta fucking know about this, I gotta know. The other thing I'll say though is going back to Danielle, your notion of like knowing about news pegs. One of the things that I got in the habit of doing as a freelancer was like, even though I was like academia at the time and I was trying to do like really weird Austin Walker ass, like heady game study shit, and like, how do I make that part of the mainstream? I was trying my best to find inroads based on new releases, based on current events, and I was planning stuff out months in advance. So like if you look at something, the piece that I always talk about with this is Real Human Beings, which was about Watch Dogs and Shadow of Mordor. That's a piece I had in my mind 6 months before Shadow of Mordor came out, or Watch Dogs, whichever one came out second. I was like, okay, I think it was Shadow of Mordor. I was waiting for the Nemesis system based on how I'd seen it portrayed in like the streams and stuff. And I had to play it still and be like, okay, does this fucking work? Does this idea work? But I was pitching that idea for months in the lead up across the different outlets. And so like that is one of the things that writers in other industries have been doing for a long, long time, right? Like if you have a pitch about the Super Bowl, you would have needed to get that landed 3 or 4 months ago, not this month as we get into the NFL playoffs. If you have a pitch about, you know, the primary season, like that's going to be an ongoing thing. You'll be able to place that still. But if you have a specific pitch about, you know, the specific primaries in a particular state, you want to get that in very early so that you can start like moving that around. And that means sometimes paying attention to the industry, the capital I games industry, in a way that isn't always what you want to do. Because I know that for me, like you're interested in kind of esoteric topics or are interested in talking about stuff that feels more meaningful than what are the new releases this week. But something like the Resident Evil 2 re-release is a huge news peg. It's a huge opportunity for you to do deep dives into the history of Resident Evil, the history of Capcom, the history of survival horror, the future of survival horror. Like, start looking at those events as angles by which you can try to place your stories, and that will end up going a long way. It's not perfect. It's really frustrating. And often, as a writer, it will feel shoehorned in because what you'll be doing is starting with a paragraph that says, like, you know, this month marks the release of Resident Evil 2, the remaster, that blah, 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 blah. Well, da 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 da.
And then your piece.
And then your piece. And ideally, that shouldn't be it. Like, ideally, what you should do is actually weave these things forward and together in a way that, like, produces some new meaning. You shouldn't be stretching that far. But also, as someone who's been a freelancer, I know that stretch well. And you have to pay the bills and try to get a portfolio going. But your portfolio will be stronger if you give yourself that lead-up time to really let these ideas marinate and let whatever that news peg is actually integrate with the actual story that you're trying to write. And whether that, again, is a retrospective piece or a piece of criticism, or whatever it is, it is a hustle.
I haven't had to do this, so this is me spitballing. But I'm wondering, like, it's very difficult if you're pitching a piece, you're trying to get someone to bite on it, and then maybe haven't written it yet, but it's like, you know, the kind of pieces we're talking about, like we're talking about like long, really thoughtful essays, yeah. You know, 800, 1500 words, maybe more. It could be effective to share those like truncated versions of the argument you want to make on Twitter. And if like that stuff gets shared, right? Like it's a lot easier to go viral on social media than it is to get a pitch approved and like the traffic later prove that you had a good idea. And even then, that's not a guarantee, right? Because you could publish a terrific piece that one day gets a little bit of traffic, but the next day, because, you know, X number of reasons that are out of your control, it takes off. And, you know, like, the you know, this Red Dead piece that I, you know, wrote 2 weeks ago as an exercise just to write something for that week because I hadn't written in a week and a half is probably going to be one of, like, the top three stories that I wrote all year. Like,
easy.
I mean, sure. Yeah. Sure, I touched on a nerve. Yeah, a little bit. Like, I was just – and but that's, like, throwing shit at the wall, right? Like, and I wasn't – it just happens, right? So you just don't know. Like, and that piece could have ran a day later and not done any of that. Mm-hmm. I have no idea. But it's all to say there might be I haven't seen people do this in pitches, but like there might be utility in like testing out those ideas on social media to find out like what kind of response you get. And either like maybe you have something that like gets spread pretty widely and like that you can use it as a way of pointing out like, hey, there are people interested in this idea.
I've definitely know, been on the other side here, of it.
But I'm just trying, wondering if that's like maybe a potential.
I've definitely reached out to people because of a tweet and be like, hey, do you want to actually write this for me?
Yeah, right.
For sure.
Yeah. I was just going to say in terms of like the financial stuff of like having to like build, because Autumn was saying that they only have access to a Switch and an iPad. Mm-hmm. And I know, Austin, you mentioned this to me a long time ago, and it's something I looked into was, you know, the Xbox has pay over time system. If you buy the Xbox One, if you buy it at the Microsoft Store.
Yeah.
And for as far as I can see, there's no sort of catch. It's just you buy
it
and
is
then
not
you
like,
just pay over amount of time. There's no like interest or anything
like
that.
It's
like
a
like
shady.
Yeah. Like, so yeah. The Xbox does have the Xbox Games Pass, which is something that has helped me because I don't get codes as often as everyone else. And if there's no extra codes, then I often have to buy games. The Xbox Games Pass, which is about $10 a month, I think, has allowed me to play Ashen, allowed me to play Sea of Thieves, like a lot of games that, you know, are like $60-some at release. And you want to talk about it when they first come out. You don't want to wait till they're discounted months and months later. I've missed a lot of discourse because I've waited for sales and stuff like that. So that's like been one of the more affordable options I've seen in terms of being able to expand your games library. That has been a huge help for me. It's still, I mean, it.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean, it's broken. Like, the thing that sucks is that it shouldn't be this way.
Yeah.
And I think that we on the media side have a responsibility to try to push it that way. And I say that as someone who did that. Like, we spent a year and a very hefty freelance budget doing our best to cover games old and new, to get away from product releases. Like, I know this pitch. I've given this pitch. When I pitched the website to this company, this was the pitch I gave.
Yeah.
And the disheartening thing that I found was, like, there is no amount of money that we could throw at this. There was no amount of pieces we could commission that were not just about new releases that would generate enough buzz to drive traffic to stories that were about things that were not new releases or tied to something with a news peg, no matter how good they were. Like, we published so much incredible criticism and even, you know, like, interesting retrospectives and interviews and things like that for in the year of 2017 when we were putting out 30 or 40 stories a week. And most of them just didn't find an audience. Like, the stuff that did, there was no clear logic to it outside of like, okay, yeah, this is about Breath of the Wild. This is a big game this year. That's going to hit. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? But like when we were doing retrospectives about Super Nintendo RPGs that people had missed, or when we were doing deep dives about games from 2016 or 2015, that stuff, like the audience had already moved on. There was a very fickle thing. And like to some degree, I know that it sounds like what I'm doing is putting it back on the general audience and the public. But what I actually think is that we need to move to a system, or we need to invest in systems and support systems and outlets that are finding other methods of finance. Things like, you know, places like Unwinnable and Deorbital, mm-hmm. places that have kind of subscription-driven income and models, who then do have a broader sense of freedom in terms of what types of material they're publishing. That goes a long way. And like, for me in the media, like, that's not the thing. I can't snap my fingers and make Waypoint that model. I wish I could. We definitely, it's something we've looked into. It's something we're still looking into. Mm-hmm. But like, it is something that is also just like a truth about the situation. And so the best thing I can do is shout out those places that are already using that model and make sure people know about them, because those are the places that are going to continue to be pushing the edge on in terms of the breadth of criticism, the breadth of reporting and feature storytelling. So shout outs to them. Shout outs to you, Autumn. And I hope that things go well for you, because mm-hmm. it sounds like you have the drive and you have the interest and you have the capacity to really do this. And I hope that you can find the strength for it. Also, the same for everybody else out there who I know is also thinking that. There's a lot of people who think that, not just from the press side, but from the developer side, from the podcasting side. We all got dreams. It's tough out there. Mm-hmm. On that note, I think we're going to wrap up. You can find me on Twitter at Austin_Walker. Where can people find you, Danielle?
At Danielle RI.
How about you, Patrick?
At Patrick Club.
Natalie.
At Natalie Watson.
Follow Cotto at @A_Cotto_appears. You can follow Waypoint, twitter.com/Waypoint. You can find the song Miss You by Bowen at waypoint.zone/BOEN. You can find our forums at discourse.zone. Find us on Facebook, facebook.com/waypointvice, twitter.com/waypoint, youtube.com/waypointvice, where we're getting up more of our...
All of our XCOM
All of our XCOM is up Yay! There. Yep. Nice
so
work, Natalie.
So you've been missing those.
And we're
all
working
of
on
ours.
Getting our Farewell to Lobby 1 stream up also, which Yay. Had Yes. some incredible moments. I think the other stuff, by the time you hear this, it'll be tonight, it'll be Monday. So tomorrow, I think we're going to be doing Unbreakable for our Be Good and Rewatch It. And then Wednesday, we're recording Mark of the Ninja, Waypoint 101. Send in questions, gamingadvice.com, Waypoint 101 question. Hit us up. I think that's going to do it for us on this very punchy Monday afternoon. People are knocking at the door. They're coming for us. They want us to leave. We won't go. We're going to go because we're polite, but that's the only reason.
We're going to go and we're going to tell them to be good. And be good at it.
Peace. What we don't have is Patrick's face. That's okay. You know what I can do? Let's see if I can just do well. Patrick, do you want to turn on video?
Sure.
Oh, wait, I need my notes. It's not going to work. Okay. I don't need my notes. We're good.
Wing it.
We're going to wing it.
Can you pull your notes up on your phone?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I can do that.
I know they weren't, those weren't words, but they were sounds.
Yow.
Those were sounds.
I
All
snorted.
Right.
I love your short anklet.
Thank you.
It's very good.
I feel fashion.
It's good.
We're gonna do a tour of this room once we go. Once we're ready to actually go. All right.
Happy birthday.
Almost. Give me 3 weeks.
Aww. Well, that's right. We're really close in birthday.
Wow.
Yeah. I'm flying to Disney on my birthday.
Nice.
Oh, that's exciting.
Woo!